I'm in it for the long run, the minutes and the years. I'm in it for the long run, the hours and the days. I'm in it for the long run, the laughter and the tears. I'm in it for the long run, even though you're far away.
Well, hello there. This is Jim Rooney, and I am in it for the long run. Welcome back to this series of programs where we're trolling through my more than 60-year journey in the musical world. The last program I was talking about how I started working with John Prine. We started Oh Boy Records with I Saw Mama Kissing Santa Claus. And then John asked me if I'd help him put together an album from the various demos of songs he'd been piling up over the last year or two in the early 80s. And I want to play a couple more from that early collection. That's called Aimless Love. We listened to Aimless Love last time. And I'm going to play another song that he wrote with a wonderful keyboard player from Alabama, Donnie Fritz, the Leaning Man from Alabama, they called him. This is called The Oldest Baby in the World. John Prine gets a lot of inspiration from publications like the National Enquirer. And I believe this was a headline in that paper. And John looked at Donnie and said, I think we've known a lot of those old babies. And this is the song.
She got the mind of a child and a body peeking over the hill. Well, she would if she could, and she should, but nobody will. With her nails painted red and her hair so unnaturally curled, well, I think that she may be the oldest baby in the world. She's tasted the nightlife, but it's left her with nothing but hunger. And all the available men seem to think they want something younger. But youth is a costume, and the beauty within lies unfurled. And I think that she may be the oldest baby in the world. Fast horses win races, and royal flushes beat aces. Everyone's plain to keep. So let's turn out the lights and rock that old baby to sleep. She loves the sound of the rain, but you know she's still afraid of the thunder. She keeps a head full of hope and a heart that's so full of wonder. She may look like a woman, but she's still some daddy's little girl. I think that she may be the oldest baby in the world. Yes, I think that she may be the oldest baby in the world.
Oh, Oh, the oldest baby in the world there with John Prine. And I'm listening to that and really enjoying listening to the lyric. It has so many elements of John's writing. It's very sympathetic to the subject and generous and funny all at once. And I remember playing on that with Philip Donnelly and Rachel Peer and Donnie Fritz on the keyboards. And we were really all in tune with each other at this time and making music together on a pretty regular basis, both in the studio and at John's house or somebody else's house, wherever we were. And it was quite a wonderful time. And at this time, John started writing with other writers in Nashville, and a fellow from Bristol, England had come to Nashville named Roger Cook. Roger's best known songs would be I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing in Simple Harmony, and Long Tall Woman in a Cool Black Dress, You Got Your Troubles, I've Got Mine, a wonderful songwriter. And then another writer, Sandy Mason, who gave us When I Dream. And he wrote this next song with Roger and Sandy, and it's certainly one of my favorites from this time. It's called Only Love.
You may live alone and close your eyes, some folks do. You may dream a dream that's twice your size all night through. When the morning comes, who's to tell your dreams to? Only you. Only love, love only, only love will do. Only love, love only, only love comes true. Nothing else, you see, there's nothing else. Only love, only love. I have known a love within my heart, one or two, where one love would end and one would start, I never knew. If love should come your way, you'll learn to say, I love you, I love you. Only love, love only, only love will do. Only love, love only, only love comes true. Nothing else, you see, there's nothing else. Only love, only love.
Oh, I love that song. And I love that recording. It is so simple. We didn't feel the need to dress it up in any way. That's a wonderful keyboard player named Charles Cochran playing that simple organ on it, and it's John's guitar, and then Roger singing the harmony with Sandy Mason, the other two writers. And these are called song demos, you know, where the idea is to do a simple version of a song, and then maybe some star will come along and do a fuller version. But for my mind, that's where this song really belongs, and I love that recording. At this time, there was Philip Donnelly had come, you know, showed up in Nashville. He came to this country with Donovan, the singer, and through a series of quirks and fate, he wound up with the singer and writer Lee Clayton in Nashville, and he became a big part of our world. And so there started to be a bit of traffic between Nashville and Ireland, and one of the first arrivals was a great, great singer, and she's still in Nashville, Maura O'Connell. And she was brought over by a friend of mine named P.J. Curtis, who produces records and writes books and is a wonderful person. And Philip Donnelly put together a band for Maura. And this is a song, this was Maura's first album, actually. And I had the great pleasure and privilege of playing some rhythm guitar on it. And this is a song that Philip wrote with Roger Cook, and it was later done by Crystal Gale. But I love Maura's version of it, and it's called Living in These Troubled Times.
All the things within you takes your heart and
Mara O'Connell with Living in These Troubled Times, a song that Philip Donnelly and Roger Cook and Sam Hogan wrote. And you can hear Philip's guitar, of course, just singing in these tracks. And you could also hear Jerry Douglas on the dobro and Bela Fleck on the banjo. This was back in the very early 80s, and they were just starting to come into the Nashville scene as players. I'd been aware of both of them from the bluegrass world, but now they were coming into and starting to play on studio sessions. And this was just such a creative time in Nashville, I must say. We were all mixing things up all the time and seemed to have good results. I had also gone back to Ireland myself, Philip Donnelly, and we put together a band for Don Everly when before he and his brother Phil got back together again, called the Dead Cowboys, and we did a tour in Europe. And then Philip Donnelly and Don and myself went to Ireland to play a wonderful big festival at Ballisadare. This was in 1980, so I hadn't been back to Ireland since the early, since 64. And it was quite an emotional time for me, and it started me really starting to head back to Ireland. And later that year, I took Peter Rowan there. After Peter and Bill and I, Bill Keith and I had finished a tour in Europe, I said to Peter, you've got to come to Ireland. So we went over and spent some time in Sligo up near the ocean. And it was a magic time. And Peter Rowan is one of these people that soaks up atmosphere from wherever he is. And he soaked it up in Ireland and came back to Nashville and asked me if I'd help him put together an album. And this is one of the album was called Walls of Time. And this is a song that is the lyric is from a writer named Patrick Cavanaugh, a well-known writer in Ireland. And it's a famous song of his called Raglan Road. And here's Peter's version of it.
On a quiet street where the old gold
Other Peter Rowan there with the Raglan Road. Sorry for the skips and the vinyl, but we do love vinyl still, and I love the performance. You could hear Ricky Skaggs and Eddie Adcock, Ricky Skaggs singing tenor, Eddie Adcock, a great banjo player with the Country Gentleman, singing baritone, Jerry Douglas once again, Sam Bush playing mandolin, and on an electric clavinet from Ireland, Trina O'Donnell, who had been part of a very, very big, influential traditional band over there, the Bothy Band, and was spending time in Nashville at the time. So it was quite a mix of players that Peter got together, and I was very happy to accommodate. And as I say, I was staying busy all the time these days in the studio, one way or the other, playing guitar or producing or engineering. I had learned how to engineer. Jack Clement had taught me how to do that. And my good friend Richard Dobson, who I'd known from the times at Bishop's Pub back in 74, part of the group from Houston, including Rodney Crowell and Towns Van Zandt and Guy and Susanna Clark. And Richard had been playing around town with a trio, and I really liked the sound. And he asked me one night if I'd help him make an album. And, of course, the beauty of Jack Clement's place was that if he wasn't using it, I could use it. And no questions asked. It was just a terrific, amazing gift that he gave me. So I got together, and I thought Philip Donnelly would suit Richard's style. And here's a song we did. It's about a daredevil rider like Evel Knievel over in England, and it's The Ballad of Robin Wintersmith.
Mama's in the kitchen, she's rattled in pans, and the baby cries on the TV news. Somebody dies. Was a crazy biker in a motorcycle riding daredevil show in Merry England, oh, 27 years old. Trying to break a record at jumping over cars, he was the champ. He fell a little bit short. Hit the ramp. This is the story, sad and it's gory, Robin Wintersmith. He was a very brave man, if you give him a drift. He waved to the crowd, headed down a runway like a man possessed. Robin Wintersmith, you know, he'd done his best. Songs, I hang out in bars, I play this guitar, I don't jump over cars. Mama's in the kitchen, she's rattling pans, and the baby cries on the TV news. Somebody dies. Was a crazy biker in a motorcycle riding daredevil show in Merry England, oh, 27 years old.
Philip Donnelly there levitating. I'm sure he was levitating by the end of that song. The Ballad of Robin Wintersmith with Richard Dobson, a wonderful album we made called Save the World, and we made the album in pretty much a weekend. And we were able to work really fast, and Jack's studio basically was set up to record live, and people who could sing and play and deliver the goods live without a lot of fixes and overdubs and everything else. Richard's record has that feel to it. When I listen to it today, it still feels very fresh to me. Well, you never know when an opportunity is going to come your way. There was no big money involved in helping Richard make that record. I really did it as a favor because I liked him so much and I believed in his music. But this turned out to be an opportunity. Several months later, after we finished the record, it was summertime, Richard called me up, invited me out to a barbecue at his house. And went out there. It was a lovely summer evening. And there was a young girl there from Texas, a friend of his from Texas. And we were sitting around swapping songs, and this turned out to be Nancy Griffith. I didn't know about Nancy. I hadn't heard about her. But she had, by this point, made a couple of albums down in Texas and was starting to play out a bit, circulate in the coffee houses of Texas. And also, you know, she was based in Houston at a place called Anderson Fair. And starting to come out into the world, and she had heard Richard's album and really liked it. She loved the playing of Philip Donnelly, and she started talking to me about the possibility of making an album, and she had really clear ideas. For one thing, she wanted to have the steel guitar player Lloyd Green play on it because her aunt loved his playing. That kind of logic is my kind of logic. And so we started getting together, and over the course of a few months, Nancy would come up to Nashville from Texas, and we'd spend time together. She'd play out with myself and Pat Alger and Pat McLaughlin, and we got a little core of songs together. And in the June of 1984, we trooped upstairs to Jack Clement's studio and started recording. And here is her version of the Ballad of Robin Wintersmith.
On a 7.
Once again, Philip Donnelly levitating at the end of the song with the Ballad of Robin Winter-Smith. That's Nancy Griffith's version of it as we recorded it in 1984. There are some players on here I want to mention. The percussion and drums is Kenny Malone, a great master drummer, and this was one of the very first sessions I got a chance to work with Kenny. I'd played with him on various things that Jack Clement was recording, but this was the first time I got a chance to hire him and work with him, and what a great master percussionist and drummer. And on the bass, Roy Husky Jr. His dad was a well-known bass player, played on the Opry for years and years. His name was Junior Husky, and they called him Junior Husky, and Roy was known as Junior Husky Jr. And sadly, Junior Husky died in his early 40s, but Roy picked up the bass right where his dad left off and had I can't describe what he meant to me as far as having him on a recording session. The time was absolutely impeccable, and between him and Kenny Malone, the time was just something that gives you great pleasure, gives me great pleasure, and makes it possible for everyone else to play. It's a great foundation upon which to build a record. Now, by this time, I had talked Pat Alger into moving to Nashville, and he was writing songs, and this was a song that Nancy heard on one of the nights when we were all playing together out in a club, and she loved it, and it's called Once in a Very Blue Moon.
I found your letter in my mailbox today. You were just checking if I was okay. And if I miss you, well, you know what they say. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. Tell me you'd like to be friends and help me get back on my feet again. And if I miss you, well, it's just now and then. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very.
Nancy Griffith there with Once in a Very Blue Moon, and that's a Pat Alger, Gene Levine song, and that became the title of this album of Nancy's, and this was an important album in her career and also in mine, because it gave me the confidence that I could make really first-class sounding records with a first-class artist like Nancy Griffith. So she brought some friends of hers from Texas up for this session, a guitarist named Stephen Doster, and two singers, Denise Frankie and Lyle Lovett. And I didn't know any of them, of course, and this was my introduction to Lyle, and we did one of his songs, and if I'm not mistaken, I think this might be the first time one of Lyle's songs got recorded by anyone. And his title is If I Were the Man That You Wanted. I wouldn't be the man that I am. Of course, we had to change that. And this is Nancy's If I Were the Woman You Wanted. Nancy there with Lyle Lovett's song, If I Were the Woman You Wanted. And this was the beginning of a great relationship with Lyle as well. Became lifelong friends, and I was such an admirer of his talents. We were up there in Jack's studio. This album, we had 13 songs, and we recorded all 13 in 2 days. And Nancy was doing these vocals live. There are almost no fixes on this recording. She was very, very prepared, and all of the musicians were very impressed by her professionalism, her spirit, and her determination and commitment. You can't say enough about it. And it made for a very special time. Here again, I was bringing in some even other voices into the mix. Bela Fleck also played on this album, as well as Mark O'Connor, who had just come to Nashville. And I was, of course, familiar with Mark from the bluegrass world as well. And he and Bela set up shop. We were all up there together. There was, I think at the height of the fray, it was about 10 or 11 people in the studio, all pretty much in a big circle around the room. And Bela and Mark set up a shop together over by a window and sort of created their own sound. And it's really great on this next song, which is Nancy's tribute to the club in Houston where she really got her start, Anderson Fair. It's called Spin on a Red Brick Floor. There's Spin on a Red Brick Floor with Nancy Griffith, and you can feel all the interaction of the players. That's all live, folks. That's Mark O'Connor on the mandolin, Bela Fleck on the banjo, Lloyd Green on the dobro, Philip Donnelly on the electric guitar, all weaving that wonderful riff around Nancy. And that to me was just a very exciting time in the studio. There we all were. And very focused, and about lots of energy and a lot of fun in the playing. And so that was, those cuts are there from the first album that Nancy and I did in 1984 called Once in a Very Blue Moon. That came out on Rounder Records, and I think it's still there. As I say, I was really getting to use all these brilliant young acoustic players that were coming into Nashville, and Bela Fleck certainly was one of the top leaders of this group. And Bela, as I mentioned earlier, that Jack Clement had encouraged me to learn how to run the board and engineer. I didn't think I would be very good at it, but I did learn how to do it, and it was a great asset to me because I understood the process much better. And then I was available to record people, and Bela asked me if I'd help him record an album with a wonderful fiddler named Blaine Sprouse, and he assembled all the beautiful, wonderful acoustic musicians to be on Blaine's album. This was for Rounder Records as well. The album is called Brilliancy, and that's what the name of this cut is. Bela Fleck and Blaine Sprouse, it's Blaine's album, and Blaine's song, Brilliancy. And the mandolin picker on that cut was Jesse McReynolds of Jim and Jesse, the great bluegrass band. And this was another feature of Nashville for me at this time, where the veterans, the real veterans like Kenny Malone, Lloyd Green, and Jesse McReynolds were mixing it up with the young guys who were just coming into their own, like Bela Fleck, Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush, Mark O'Connor. And Bela came to me again with a request, and a brilliant bassist had come to town. I met him at a party at John Hartford's house, and I just couldn't believe my ears. His name is Edgar Meyer. And Bela came to me and said, I want to do some cuts with Edgar Meyer, but it's going to be on spec. We don't know if there'll be a label or anything. Would you do it? And I said yes. It was and we actually the first session was on St. Patrick's Day, and I was working for nothing on St. Patrick's Day, but it was well worth it. And Edgar has gone on to a world career as a bassist and wonderful person, just as nice as he can be. And here is a cut from that album, which was called Unfolding. It came out on MCA Records in Nashville eventually. And this is a duet between Edgar Meyer and Bela Fleck. Thank you. Well, there you have it. That's Edgar Meyer with Bela Fleck, Mark O'Connor, Jerry Douglas, Sam Bush. And, I mean, there they all are, the brilliant young musicians that were really starting to make an impact on everybody in Nashville. And I was privileged to be able to record them, and I was so lucky to be in that position and get people going. I'm going to go out now on another cut from Blaine Sprouse's album. This is called The Mist on the Moor. There's Blaine Sprouse and Bela Fleck. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with more. This is Jim Rooney. I'm in it for the long run.